Welcome to the Days for Girls podcast, a show about breaking barriers for women and girls around the world. I'm your host, Jessica Williams, Chief Communications Officer at Days for Girls International. At Days for Girls, we believe in a world where periods are never a problem. We are on a mission to shatter the stigma and limitations associated with menstruation by increasing access to sustainable period products and menstrual health education for all people with periods. Today's guest is Dr. Brittany Barreto, the co-founder, executive director, and podcast host of FemTech Focus. While finishing her PhD in genetics at Baylor College of Medicine, Brittany became the CEO and co-founder of the revolutionary dating app Faramore. This ambitious venture was the first nationwide DNA-based dating app. She then embarked on a new path into venture capital as the senior venture associate at Capital Factory in Houston, Texas. Brittany now has her sights on advancing the women's health and wellness community through her latest world-changing venture, FemTech Focus. She is the host of the FemTech Focus podcast, which has over 100 episodes, 30,000 downloads, and subscribers in 100 countries. FemTech Focus has assisted hundreds of FemTech founders to build, launch, and succeed through their events, resources, and market research reports. Additionally, Brittany is founding partner and emerging fund manager at Coyote Ventures, an early-stage FemTech investment firm. I loved this conversation. Brittany is such an interesting guest, so I can't wait to share it with you. Let's go on to the show. Brittany, welcome to the show. I am so excited to have this conversation with you today. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you.
Good. You're a fellow podcaster. Yay!
Yay! I talk for a living.
I know. It's so fun. I just adore podcasting. How about you?
Oh my gosh. Like, I seriously can't even believe it. I love when people ask me what I do for a living and I say, I'm a podcaster, because I still can't believe it.
Well, we just love your podcast here at Days for Girls. And you recently had our CEO, Celeste, on, and I'm really excited to share that episode when it comes out. So we thought we would, turn around and have you on our show as well. So I think this is going to be awesome.
Definitely. No, I'm happy to be here.
Cool. So first of all, because I interview people from all over the world, where are you from? Where do you live?
So originally from New Jersey in the United States, and then I moved to Houston, Texas for 8 years doing a graduate school and then my company, and we'll talk more about that. But actually during the pandemic, I just got really tired of my studio apartment in downtown Houston and wanted to prioritize my mental health. And that for me looks like nature. And so I moved to Raleigh, North Carolina in September 2020, and I'm really loving it here.
Wow. You didn't know this, but I am from North Carolina. I grew up in Winston-Salem, and my sister lives in Raleigh, so very familiar with the area. It's a great place to be. So Brittany, I was doing some research on your background, and one of the things that really stands out to me as so interesting is that you have a PhD in genetics. And my first question is just, I've got to know, what made you pursue that field of study?
So in seventh grade, I was 12 years old. We studied rocks, geology, and I nearly failed. And I can remember being a 12-year-old little girl and tell my mom how much I hated science. I hate science. I hate it. I hate it. Turns out I just hate rocks. And so the next year, eighth grade, we learned about cellular biology. And we learned about the powerhouse of the cell, the mitochondria. And we learned about adenine and thymine and that these like little nucleotides make you who you are. And my mind was blown. So I actually knew from like 13 that like I wanted to do something with DNA. I thought that was going to be a genetic counselor. And then in college, I shadowed a genetic counselor for the day. And if anyone is listening, wondering what career they want, I highly recommend shadowing someone for the day because it totally changed my mind. It seemed like actually a really sad job. Like the person was just telling parents that their babies were going to be sick and they had to make a hard choice. And I was like, wow, I'm way too sensitive for this. I cannot have this as a career. And so, essentially ran back to my academic advisor, said, oh my God, I love DNA, but the job I thought I wanted is actually the worst. And he suggested I do a research internship in his laboratory that summer. Turns out I have a knack for working in the lab. And, you know, next thing I knew, the trajectory was to get a PhD in it.
So when you, or while you're getting your degree, it seems like you co-founded a DNA-based dating app. And I am, all I can think is like, it reminds me of that movie that just came out on Netflix. It's called The One. Yeah. Did they base that after you? Because I'm like, this is what?
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. So I was the founder of Faramore, the first nationwide DNA-based dating app. We match singles using a cheek swab, looking at genes that can predict attraction between individuals. The reason why there was a startup mine, there was also a book called The One, which is what the Netflix show The One is based off of. All of it exists because it is actually really old and well-established science since the 60s. And there's over 3 decades of research showing that the genes can predict who you're going to be attracted to. And so that's what I base my app off of. That's what that individual wrote the book off of. And that's, you know, what Netflix is doing. It's so funny. When that first came out, I posted on my Twitter and was like, okay, y'all, please save your private messages. No, that's not my show. No, it's not about us, you know, like, and I still get all these messages, but it's kind of cool. So I started Faramore in 2016. Honestly, it was right after the presidential election in the United States. I was really disturbed of the direction of our country. And so I decided I want to be a woman of influence. And I thought at the time, well, usually people with money have influence. So how am I going to make money? And I thought, I always had this crazy idea for a DNA-based dating app ever since I learned about it in genetics class, you know, that you can predict who's attracted to who. So December 2016, I started Faramore. I ended up raising $1.3 million from angels in Texas. And I built an app and I did it, you know, and like we launched it and we added about 20,000 singles on the app and, you know, we formed relationships and we did that for about 2 years.
Does that app still exist today? Like what happened to it?
So it does not exist today. You can Google it, Faramore. It's like pheromones in love, Pheramore. And what happened was in March 2019, Apple changed their policies around who can ask for DNA in the App Store. So previously, anyone was allowed to make an app and ask you for your genome, send them your spit or whatever. But, you know, as a geneticist, I think it's a great idea. They started to put some boundaries around who can ask for that. As a business owner, it totally was awful because we got kicked off the App Store. Dating apps were not allowed to ask for your DNA. And so, you know, people say, well, why don't you petition Apple? Why don't you tell them? I said, Apple doesn't listen to the FBI. They're not going to listen to me. So, and they didn't. At that point, I was in the process of raising my Series A round from venture capitalists. They found out we got kicked off the App Store. They pulled their money. We didn't have a lot of money left anyways. We tried a Hail Mary. So if anyone looks me up and they see something that says wehavechemistry.com, you may be like, wait, what's that? That's the Hail Mary. We had about 50K left. And we try to make a couples website for couples to find their scientific love language. But we just ran out of time and money. And I ended up closing Faramore in June 2019.
No shame in that. So crazy story. Wow.
I know.
I'm like wondering, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would love to have my DNA tested with my partners to see, you know, like, oh, that's so cool.
It's really fascinating. It's a great icebreaker too on dating apps to talk about that, you know? It did what I wanted it to. When I look back, it was really hard. I feel like I've grieved it enough that now I can say like, wow, I'm really proud of what happened. But, you know, at the time it was tough, but it did what I wanted it to, right? I became a woman of influence. I became a woman who knew how to build like companies, you know? And I took that into my next thing.
So tell us about your next thing. You go on to be a senior associate with a venture capital firm. Can you tell us more about that?
So venture capital firms are essentially the these big pots of money that they invest in startups. And so I, you know, was raising money from them when I was a founder. And then once Faramore closed, there was a firm in Texas based out of Austin that wanted to launch a Houston branch. I knew the Houston market really well. So they hired me to launch their Houston branch. They also had an accelerator associated with it. So my job was to recruit startups in the Houston area, get them into our programming, and then if they were doing really well, make an investment decision on whether or not we should make an investment into that company. And I just loved it because I love impact. I love making, you know, big waves. And there's something about being a founder and having to focus on a single product. And there's something about being an investor where you can have a portfolio of 20 products. And that kind of just feels like 20x the impact to me. And so I really like that. I love mentoring and I'm a unique venture capitalist who really loves to roll my sleeves up and have one-on-ones and whiteboard with founders and break things down. I've done a lot of lectures that are on YouTube. Like, I really enjoy demystifying startups and fundraising process for founders. And I also learned something else that was really useful, which was investors are not as smart as I thought they were. Like, I always was really scared of investors, even while fundraising. I thought, like, they're all knowing, they have MBAs, like, I'm just a scientist, and, you know, they must know all these financial things that I don't know about. And then I worked for them and I realized, like, oh no, like, yeah, they have MBAs, but I'm a geneticist. Like, I think I can spar here, you know? Right. And so I felt like, oh, I don't need to be afraid. In fact, I think I could be an amazing VC, and I'm done, you know? So anyways, that was, you know, big realization in terms of what career I wanted. And then the last issue there was that I was working in Houston. So there was a lot of like oil and gas startups and supply chain management, logistics, shipping, and that stuff just bored me to tears. I like could not. I didn't know. But whenever I came across a medical device or therapeutic or digital health, because Houston also has the largest medical center in the world, so we did have a lot of biotech and healthcare innovations happening. Whenever one of those came across my desk, I was excited. But whenever it was addressing women's health, I found myself like canceling the rest of my day so I could just work with that founder, like just totally obsessed. I found that every time I met someone innovating in women's health, it was like they were the first to ever acknowledge that issue for women. You know, it was like always, it wasn't like, well, we're better than these other 20 competitors, because it was more like there still doesn't exist a diagnostics test for ovarian cancer and women are dying. And so we're going to fix that. And I was like, yeah, that sounds important. Like, you deserve my mentoring. You deserve my support. You deserve my attention. And so that's when I discovered an industry called femtech, which is innovation in women's health and wellness.
I love it. Your journey is so fun. Okay. So femtech is, you know, technology in the women's health space. So tell us how you approach that. Like, what are you doing in that space to help that sector?
You know, once I realized that, oh, this thing I'm really into has a name, it's called femtech, I said, oh, good, I'll just Google it and I'll find a job. And I go to Indeed and, you know, Monster, and like I I put in femtech and it's like, does not compute. Like, what is femtech? And I'm like, okay. And so I start to Google like femtech venture funds. At the time in 2019, there was only one portfolio. And I was like, there's only one femtech fund? Like, what the heck? And I was like, surely there's a conference. Let me attend a conference, I'll network. There was no femtech conference. I was like, what the heck is happening? And I finally had this moment where I realized, oh my gosh, women's health is an emerging industry. Nobody's taken the time to build out a community for people working in women's health innovation. Now, there's plenty of women's health stuff, right? A lot of times, though, it has to do with like infertility or birthing. Like, if you think about any women's hospital, like, it's actually just a birthing center, right? Like, I don't know of any women's hospitals that just have like giant clitoris statues outside, right? No, it's somebody holding a baby, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of all started to come to me, and I said, oh gosh, I feel my founder genes lighting up. and I said, oh, I think I have to make something. And so, I started to think, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And one of the things I really wish there was a podcast. There wasn't even a podcast for me to listen to and learn. And so, months are going by. I'm like noodling on what am I going to do? And, March 2020 happens. We go into lockdown, right? And I find myself with more time on my hands because I'm just at home in my studio apartment, decide, hey, you know what? I could do a podcast. I watched some YouTube videos, learned how to upload it to a podcasting site and was like, yeah, I could do this. Recorded it literally on my phone. Just interviewed people in women's health space, started to, the editing was essentially copying and pasting in GarageBand. And started uploading it. And next thing I knew, I had like 1,000 listeners. And I was like, what the heck is happening? How did they even find this? And what I realized was that there was thousands of other people like me who were desperate for a femtech community and were looking up femtech, and nothing was showing up. And so when they looked up femtech focused podcast showed up. So they started to listen. They started to reach out. They started saying, wow, this is what I was looking for. This is incredible. And, I had no idea the statistics of this or that. And wow, this is so important. So by June of 2020, I had about 10,000 listeners at that point in a few dozen countries. And I had a sponsor reach out and I said, yep. So I quit my day job as a VC and started podcasting full time. Since then, Femtech Focus has grown into much more than just a podcast, although that's kind of our flagship thing. We are a 501c3 nonprofit because it's all about awareness and education and supporting the early stage startup. So it really fits well with the 501c3 mindset. And we have the podcast, over 100 episodes, about 30,000 listeners in 100 countries. We have a virtual community with about 1,000 members in there. We have weekly events. So Monday night, we have a podcast listening party where we have what we call femme fans, people in the community that are just really excited. We get together Monday nights, super casual. People bring wine, cocktails, whatever, and their dinners. And we listen to a podcast episode together and invite the speaker. And we have bi-weekly workshops on building, growing, and launching your companies. We have a lot of amazing. We just had a summit with about 300 attendees. Keynote speaker was Jesse Draper from Hologen Ventures. So some pretty big name folks. And it's been quite the ride. And I absolutely love it. I mean, Faramore was fun, but I still woke up kind of dreading the day because startups are stressful. Like, I am way less funded than I was at Faramore, and I feel more free and happy because I'm waking up and talking about things that I know there's a purpose in the world and someone needs to, talk about it. And I feel privileged that it's me for right now.
So you interview, all kinds of interesting guests because mm-hmm. they're working on the front lines of trying to solve problems in women's health. So can you share with us maybe one or two of the most interesting founders that you've interviewed? I know it's hard to pick, but I'm looking here at CBD infused tampons, and I'm thinking fascinating, So I just share with some folks some of the episodes and what they could expect on the show.
Totally. So that CBD infused tampon one, that company is called Day, which is DAYE. And it is such a cool company. The woman is out of England, the UK. She actually funded her clinical trials because tampons are actually a medical device. So class 1 med device, because it goes in the body. So she needed clinical trials to even create her CBD infused tampons for pain relief. And no one would fund her because all the investors said, well, that's what Advil is for. Why would women need a CBD infused tampon? They could just take Advil. And she was so fed up. She took out credit cards and funded her clinical trials on her own credit cards because she had that much faith in it. And she has since been funded and is alive in Europe and expanding to the US pretty soon. So they are an incredible company. I mean, that's like, that's risk, right? And also faith. That's a lot of faith. So that's a great episode. One of my other favorite interviews was with Sandra Pelletier. She is the CEO of Evofem Biosciences. It's actually a publicly traded company. You may have seen commercials on TV for their drug called Phexxi. Phexxi is the first non-hormonal birth control. So birth control was created in the 60s and pretty much hasn't been updated. And so, you know, we live our lives with hormone-free chicken, hormone-free cows, but yet women are walking around being filled with hormones. And so if you're a cancer survivor, you can't have hormones. If you are, you know, someone who, you know, has a side effects to birth control, you don't really have any more options. And so Phexxi is a one-time use like medicine that is put into the vagina prior to sex. And it actually maintains your pH of the vagina because semen actually changes your pH in order for it to survive. And so ladies, ask yourself, is he worth it to change your pH? Because that's what happens. And Phexxi essentially maintains the vaginal pH, which makes it deadly to sperm. So that was just like an incredible interview because, you know, I didn't realize that 50% of pregnancies in the United States are unplanned. And so if anyone thinks contraception is a done deal, solved issue, it is not. And we need a lot more innovation there.
We absolutely do. I agree. As a woman who is struggling to find the right contraception for her, mm-hmm. yeah, there are not enough options. So mm-hmm. I'm really excited to check out this Phexxi. I've never heard of that. That's really cool.
Yep. Check out Phexxi, Phexxi. And, you know, also it's just kind of, it's crazy because, you know, right now what's going on in the world is that Johnson & Johnson vaccine just got paused because mm-hmm. 1 out of 1,000,000 chance of a blood clot, but birth control currently has a rate of 1 out of 1,000 chance of a blood clot. And so what that tells me is just where society standards are and like what risk women are allowed to take versus regular society. AKA including men. So it's like, it's absolutely insane to me. You know, women weren't included in clinical trials until 1993. It was literally illegal for women to be included in clinical trials till 1993. And so that's resulted in, you know, wild range, like 5 times more side effects in women than men, because drugs that go to market oftentimes have never been tested in a woman's metabolism than men. And like lots of other really fun facts, actually, like men's metabolism is about 30% faster than women's. And so, you know how women are like always the one that are cold in the office or in like mm-hmm. the classroom? It's because literally our metabolism is 30% slower. And so even like climate control, like air conditioning is based on men instead of women. So, yeah.
Well, I know that because everywhere I've ever been, I've been cold. And anytime I had an office, I always had a space heater next to me because I was freezing. And so did every other woman in the office. It was hilarious. Yes.
And it's literally science. It's science. Yeah. Right. But society says all women, you know, you're so sensitive. Put a sweater on, take some Advil.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, okay, wait a minute. I just got to go back. Women weren't allowed in clinical trials until 1993. Come on. Yeah. Seriously?
Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. And it's still not even required. It's just now you could if you wanted to.
So, okay. So how did they test birth control before 1993?
Gosh, on like animals.
Oh my gosh. Crazy.
I know.
that totally freaks me out. Have you read that book, Invisible Women?
Oh yeah. We actually have a book club at Femtech Focus. And so every month we read a book and we invite the author and go through it. Invisible Women is one of our books coming up. This month we're reading Doing Harm. And it's all about clinical trials and drugs and not considering, you know, women's metabolism and our menstrual cycle. There's actually a lab out of Switzerland and they study nanoparticles delivering drugs in the body. And so oftentimes nanoparticles delivering drugs is used for cancer treatment. So the nanoparticle will bring the drug directly to the tumor. And so you hopefully don't get all these other side effects. Well, turns out they had somebody messed up in the laboratory. A grad student used a female mouse in the experiments rather than a male mouse, which even the gender bias goes all the way down to the cell lines we use in cell culture. They're all male cells. We always use male animals. So we actually don't even incorporate female health all the way down into animal studies. So it is very far reaching, but some grad student messed up, used a female mouse in their nanoparticle research, took the picture, brought it to their professor. He said, "You silly grad student, like you used a female mouse. Look, there's their uterus." And the grad student said, "Yeah, and look at it. Look at the uterus." And he said, "Oh my God, the female mouse was on its period and all the nanoparticles with the drug for like the liver, the spleen, some other part, all congregated into the menstruating, you know, uterus." And he was like, "Uh-oh, I don't know if anyone's ever looked at if like women are on their period and they get nanoparticle delivered drugs, if that may affect it. Like no one's ever looked."
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's horrifying. I'm so glad you're out there doing this work and amplifying the voices of these women who are, you know, do you find that it's mostly women driving the innovations in women's health, or are there some men?
Yeah. So I do see that. So we have a database of about 650 active femtech startups in the world, and 80% of them are female founded. So we do have about 20% male founded. We love our male allies. We actually think that men have to be in the conversation. I usually say, you know, a lot of women worked on Viagra, so I want a lot of men working on whatever the hell we need. And so, yeah, no, men, we are not a man-hating group. Femtech Focus, we are absolutely feminist, but we're not angry. And we're very welcoming to all genders. We even have bullish stance on trans health as well, because it's people with vaginas or ovaries, regardless of how you identify.
That's great. Love it. Yeah, we support that too. So if people want to get access to your resources, that maybe join your book club, like want to get involved with the work that you're doing, do they have to become a member? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So first and foremost, just listen to the podcast. It'd be super fun. You know, a lot of people say they listen to it while they take a good walk or they're doing dishes. So check out the podcast. It's on every live, you know, streaming service like Spotify and iTunes. Just look up Femtech Focus. And then you can go to femtechfocus.org, and there's a button on there that says join our virtual community. And that's actually the best way. So the website has a ton of resources. You can go to the resource tab, the events tab, and check everything out there. But if you just subscribe and you click that button that says join our virtual community, you'll make a little profile, and that's where you'll be with the other 1,000 femtech. You know, you don't have to be a founder to join. You just have to be a, you know, someone interested. We have like a college students in there interested, like what is femtech? We have investors, doctors. So joining that community really allows you to see all of the other little things that we're doing, like book club.
Fantastic. Well, we will put all of those links in the show notes for everyone to find, and along with, the episodes that we talked about today, and then the links to the podcast as well. So, Brittany, this has just been so much fun. You are just a powerhouse, and I'm so impressed. And thank you for coming on the show.
Of course, no problem. Yeah, if I had a request for the world, it would be like we have statues of clitoris in front of hospitals, because women are so much more than just birthing, you know, wombs. We're more than wombs. We're so much more. And we deserve all of the innovation, all of the funding, the R&D funding. And we deserve to not be censored. We should be able to say breast and vulva and know the right words for the right parts. So, and I love what Days for Girls is doing, because although maybe not AI or blockchain, y'all are really changing women's lives around the world. And we need to consider, what does innovation look like for the girls of the Congo, the girls in, you know, the Amazon, the menstruators around the world. And sometimes it doesn't always look like an app. It looks like different things. So I love what y'all are doing too.
The Days for Girls podcast is produced by Days for Girls International. For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit daysforgirls.org/podcast. If you'd like to support the work we do on the show, leave a rating or a review wherever you listen. Subscribe to the show and share episodes on social media or with your friends. To learn more about Days for Girls and to join our global movement, please visit daysforgirls.org. Thank you for listening. See you next time.